Welcome to the Big World Made Small podcast for the adventure traveler. I'm thrilled you're here. My name is Jason Elkins, and in addition to being your host, I'm also a former U.S. Army paratrooper, third-generation commercial hot air balloon pilot, paramotor pilot, ex-Montana fly fishing guide, advanced open water scuba diver, and a full-time nomad that's visited more than 30 countries on six continents. As a seasoned adventure travel expert with a passion for creating and sharing meaningful experiences, I'm on a quest to impact the lives of adventure travelers, tour operators they rely on, and the communities that host them. Every week, I bring you exclusive interviews with fascinating adventure tourism experts who have agreed to share their personal stories, favorite destinations, and some invaluable travel insights they've picked up along the way. We'll enjoy a casual conversation, create some connections, and likely share some laughs. It's my hope that by the end of each episode, this big world will feel just a bit smaller. Let's get started, shall we? All right, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Big World Made Small Adventure Travel Podcast. So happy to have all of you here. It's super excited to have Gonzalo Fuenzalida here from Chile, Nativo Travel. I almost didn't say that right. Gonzalo, welcome to the show. So happy to have you here.
Hi, Jason. Thank you to invite me to this conversation. I appreciate your time, your show. Am I ready to have a nice talk with you?
Well, thank you so much. It's, you know, we were chatting just a little bit earlier about how whenever we're with clients out in the field, they tend to want to ask us a few questions, like kind of, where are you from? How did you get into this? So we're gonna talk a little bit about that and just kind of give our listeners an opportunity to kind of get a feel for who you are. And then, of course, you know, as we have that conversation, I'm sure some other questions will pop up. So I appreciate you sharing the opportunity with us. So let's start with that. Gonzalo, well, how did you get started? What's your story?
Okay, this is a funny story. I'm a auditing from profession. You know, people who work in Lanton Clark Price Waterhouse.
Oh, wow.
Downtown. And I was working till my 30s. And I have don't call middle age, but I have a crisis of 30th because I was working in an office in the stock market, having a great time. But I was focusing my life waiting for the weekends. So my whole life was waiting for the weekends. And I hated to use a suit to shave every day. I couldn't understand in the position I was. I was not able to use a short sleeve shirt because it was not proper in summer. So one day I was in my office at 8:30 in the morning with already a coffee and a cigarette looking for the window. At that time, you can smoke inside the office. And I was looking from the 8th floor to the bottom in downtown Santiago, and I saw an American guy, a gringo, walking in shorts and flip-flops with a backpack and a surfboard attached to the backpack. And I saw myself, and I thought, like, this is it. So I wrote a resignation letter. I went to my boss, and I presented to him. He couldn't believe it. He kind of ripped it off in front of me. No, Gonzalo, if this is about money, we can arrange this. I say, no, it's not about money. It's just, this is it. I cannot keep going on this. So after the day, I went to my parents' house and I told them, you know what? I quit. I'm going to take a year off to think about my life. And I have a month to get rid of all my possessions. At that time, I was renting a house. So I left the owner. I'm living in a month. So my parents were like, finally.
Yeah, I wanted to know, what are the first words they said?
My parents are hippies. So my parents knew that was not my life. So they were like, finally, Gonzalo, this is not for you. Go take your gear. And, you know, you have me here. You have us here for anything happen. Wow. So that was a good start. At the month I sold everything, I pay all my debt, and I have some saving money, and I took a year off. So
I'm curious, before we continue, I'm curious, did your parents, had they encouraged you to go live your dream before that, or were they just kind of letting you figure it out? And then when you figured it out, they were like, okay, finally, he got it.
Exactly. They led me to figure it out myself. Wow, they cool. knew I was not an office person. I was a sport person. I very outdoor. I love kayaking, trekking, horseback riding, my passion, taking courses, outdoor, how to survive in the waters, whatever the weekend allowed me to do. So to make the story short, I took that year off. I started in the state because my sister lives in Estelle. She's more American than Chilean now. Mm-hmm. And the year was amazing. I mean, I was so lucky. Everything went fine. I learned to snowboard in Lake Tahoe. I get a job. I become a ski bum, snowboard bum, nice. But with a job. And so after a year, I come back and then I applied to be a guide in a fancy hotel in Torres del Paine National Park in Patagonia, Explorer.
Yeah.
So well, I do all the applications and I receive a call from the manager there and say, like, Gonzalo, you pass everything, but I need to have a serious talk with you. So please come to the office next day. So I went there and she's like, I mean, you did great, but if I see your summary, you really are not outdoor background as a guy. So I was applying to be a guy. Mm-hmm. So the only thing I want to ask you, if you take this position, please stay the season, because this is not a holiday. It's a lot of people who think, oh, let's go to this fancy hotel to work for a season, and they find out it's a serious show, and they quit in the middle of the season. So I say, no problem at all. I can bet you. You are going to fire me before I quit. So then the second part of my life was 5 years working in Explora Patagonia, where I learned a lot. I explore everything, mostly by horse. And I became the head of the guide with the time. When I was in my fifth season, I decided to create my own company with another guide, which was partnered with me working in the hotel. So we create Chile Nativo in a long overland drive from Patagonia back to Santiago through the Southern Highway. And that's how the name came, because we find that was a niche in between luxury and basic backpacking. We want to do kind of luxury outdoor activities, where the luxury was where we can bring you, but with good food, with quality guides, and eventually with good hotels or good campsite. So that was the beginning and was very focusing in horseback riding experiences. Pretty quick, the other funny thing is this was 2001. So I launched my website a week after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
So you just can figure out that everything we already have been talking with the old clients from Explora, the travel agencies, the tour operator, everyone disappeared.
Yeah.
And so the beginning was pretty rough. And also we decided to start at that time home office. So we have been home office since then, 22 years already. Everybody thought like, we are crazy. We are not going to be successful. You need to have a physical office. How are you going to sell? At that time in Puerto Natales, we have internet connection by phone. Remember that?
Dialogue.
So, but you know, slowly we start to get some requests, and with the connection word to mouth, etc. We worked first pretty hard, and we sold a third of our company at the end of the first season to three of our really good friends, and to make some cash to live and to survive. And then, you know, the company started to run, and I was the one who was more focusing in the company. The other one started to get a different jobs because the company didn't make enough money for everybody. Mm-hmm. And, already have been 22 years, several crises. Now I'm a partner with my brother. We are still very close with my original partners, and my closest friend. And we have 30 people working in the office, and plus all the.
When you say in the office, though, are they working remotely in the office? Right?
Yes. Let me clear that. All the marketing, sales, financial, and sustainability are home office, which are probably 20. The other ones are in a physical office, which is the operation office. So we always have the headquarters, which was the operation, where we have our transfers, the tent, all the equipment, and where the people go there and do the briefing before they start. But we don't sell trips to the street. Everything is online. Okay, so the people who go to the office just go to, because they book the trip with us way in advance. And so when the COVID came, for example, we already have a software where we talk like we are talking now. Zoom at that time, I mean, was not famous. I wish I knew I can buy some stock there. We used Whereby. Still, we use Whereby, which is the platform we find out at that time. So that didn't change to us too much, or change a lot of things on the company with the crisis. But that I'm curious. Would say was kind of a short story about how we are right now here.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And there were a couple things. Well, everything you said was interesting. And there's a couple things that I wanted to ask you about, because really you kind of started in a crisis, right? If you mentioned you launched your business the week after 9/11, 2001, when, you know, obviously there was a, I guess we could call it a disruption in the travel industry for sure. And you talked about some of the challenges and struggles of, you know, kind of refiguring what your plan was. Maybe some people had to go do other things to kind of make it through those lean years in the beginning. And oftentimes when we go through something like that, when we're in it, it's like, man, this, I'm not going to censor myself. Man, this sucks. When you're in it, you're like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. Oh, why did we do it now? This and that. And, but then later on, you can kind of look back at it and look and say, well, what did we learn right from the beginning? Like what did that situation help us realize early on so that we didn't take 10 years to figure it out because we had to figure it out in a year, that type of thing. You know what I mean? So I'm curious what lessons came out of that that you couldn't have gotten any other way had things not happened the way they did.
Well, first, I think for me, I am a very positive person. So it's very difficult to make me feel down. You know, and I learned that any crisis we have been through is an opportunity. And if I see to the past, every single crisis have been good.
Yeah.
You see it after years, you know.
Yeah, at the time, it doesn't feel so good.
Anything. At the beginning was rough, but at the same time was a new company. We didn't expect to have too much sales. Mm-hmm. And the best learning we had is we don't need to focus too much only in the US market. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we start to look to Australia, and we didn't want to focus only in horseback riding because we find out pretty quick the business was in the trekking.
Okay.
And that was probably at that time, but as I say, everything was new for us. So we didn't expect to have a successful first season. Mm-hmm. We were just contacting people, and actually after 9/11, and I after the season I flew up to the state for my first meeting, tried to meet people, you know, with mm-hmm. my folders, all nervous and presenting my options. And the other thing is that since we decided to be just online company, we were very focused in the technology of the website. And at that time, everything was flat. So we have all this map, interactive map, like people can pop up the picture of the lookout point, the little car moving around, and a nice intro. And the webmaster, actually, which still is our webmaster and a good friend, is present the website to a competition, and we get some kind of recognition and an award for the you know, the modernity of that at that time.
Okay, cool.
And for example, another crisis we have is a subprime 2008, and we are still, our market was a strong American, even if we try to put the market European, Australian, South and Central America, American was our major market. And for some reason, and I still don't know why, maybe because we didn't have enough time and relationship with tour operators. Most of our sale was direct client, which still is 50-50. We get last minute booking. So when the subprime arrived, suddenly the booking stopped. So we get the crisis before everybody else, because the other companies in Patagonia were working with tour operator, booking in advance the groups that were already set.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
Okay. So so what happened for that for us was we decided to create the budget getaways, because we were a little bit too high-end, too expensive for what we were doing. Because we want to bring an extra porter to cook our own food, having a refugio, a hut that can provide the food. So we kind of launched these budget getaways, and we reduced the timing. We start from Puerto Natales instead of pick you up in Punta Arenas and buy expensive transfer for 3 hours. At the end, we sell the extra things anyway, or private transfer or public bus, but in purpose of selling and due the prices, was a big hit. And we were the first one who started with the first independent W trip. So do it yourself. We do all the arrangement, we do a briefing in the office, and the guys go to the park on their own. And it still is one of the major activities we offer. Organize the trip for people who want to hike on their own.
You know, it's interesting because I love that you brought that up. It's not always about the money, right? Because I'm sure you have people that are like, okay, we're going to do it, the do-it-yourself type of semi-structured. I can't remember exactly what you called it, but, you know, you give them the plan, you take care of some logistics, but they go by themselves into the book, right? And there's a lot of people out there that just like, they just want that freedom and that independence. Because, you know, for confidence builders, I mean, I've been traveling full time for the last 2 years. And I love, like, I've worked in tourism for a long time. I understand the value of a guide. I get it completely. And I got to be honest with you, sometimes I just like to go figure things out myself. Exactly. You know, a little bit of guidance. Maybe I'll do a little bit of planning on my phone. I'm like, okay, well, I know there's a bus that gets there. And then I put the phone in my pocket and I say, okay, now I'm going to go find the bus, you know, and I get a lot of sense of satisfaction out of finding my way on my own. So it's interesting that by offering a product like that, you kind of get two birds with one stone, right? You've got the people that are doing it for the cost effectiveness, but it also appeals to the person that's just really that more independent travel, right?
Exactly that. And we already have, it's one of the W Trek and the Piney Big Sip with the two main treks in the park. I will say our main clientele is independent. And, you know, now we have a special application, so people go with an application with the off signal map, you know, the whole thing. But it still is complicated for someone who wants to organize on their own. And at the same time, you get some kind of security knows that there is a company who is back you up, and you can call the company if any problem is in the refugios or the booking is not properly. And that's what you pay for, but still you pay less than going in a group with a guide, and you can save that money, especially for young crowd who want to split the travel in between Chile and Argentina and Patagonia.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. One of the things you mentioned was, it sounds like you are always pretty strong in the US market. That was your market for whatever reason. Would you say that was the case for all of the Chilean operators, or was that something that was unique to you at the time, or?
More than Chilean, I will focus in Patagonia, because that's where I know the niche. Right. I think it was a mix for the other ones. They have a lot of tour operators from France, Germany, Spain, Brazil. It's a good market too, Mexico. But since we were coming from Explorer, and our clientele were mostly from US, we were focusing in that market, and it still is the major market for Patagonia. And I will say probably for all the companies, if you do a percent, probably the majority of foreigners are, besides Argentinian, you know, the neighbors, the Northern Hemisphere will be U.S.
I'm curious why you think that is, because I've traveled I'm not sure I'd say extensively, but I've been around South America quite a bit. I'm actually in Colombia right now. And what I've noticed when I'm in certain places in South America, it's like there's a lot of Europeans, and I don't see very many Americans, to be honest with you, like especially Colombia. There are some Americans here, but there are many more Germans, Dutch, French. You see people from all over Europe in Colombia. I would say I've noticed that in other parts in Latin America as well. And I think Americans have a very strong draw to Patagonia. So I'm curious, because you are much more familiar with South American tourism than I am. Why do you think it is that Americans are so drawn to Patagonia, but maybe not as much other areas where you see more Europeans? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yes. For example, it just focuses in Chile. You go to the northern area of Chile, to the driest desert, San Pedro de Atacama, another hot spot in Chile. You see more European than American.
Ah, okay.
Even so in Patagonia, inside Chile. So I think Patagonia, but also I think it's something regarding the safetiness. Mm-hmm. I think Americans are more precautious, you know, and also Americans tend to book things well organized with someone who speak English, because mostly they don't speak Spanish.
Right.
And Europeans, I think, are more independent. We see Europeans in Patagonia. Germans are very independent in terms of renting car and RV and just driving around. Spanish also is the same language, so they feel comfortable to do it on their own.
I love that you brought up the language, because I think you're onto something, because I think Americans, when I say Americans, I'm speaking, you know, from the United States or even Canadian, English-speaking Americans, let's put it that way. They kind of have a handicap by just the nature of the English language and their location in the world, because they tend to learn English, obviously growing up. They don't tend to learn other languages. Whereas when you look at Europeans, virtually all Europeans have learned at least one other language, right? So some of them, many of them, have three or four languages under their belt. So for them to go to another country, maybe they don't speak Spanish, but for them to go to another country that speaks a different language doesn't seem like that big of a deal, because you can drive to other countries that speak other languages when you're in Europe. So I can imagine where that would make them more independent. And so many Americans, English-speaking Americans that I speak to, their number one concern is I won't be able to talk to anybody.
Exactly.
You know, what if I get down there, I get lost, something happens, I won't be able to talk to anybody. And that's unique to English-speaking Americans, I think, because Europeans, I'm not sure that same thought goes through their head. I think they're like, well, yeah, I've been to many other countries where they speak other languages, and I've always been able to figure it out somehow. So that's, I don't know, what do you think? You think that's it?
I think you make a point, because if you compare Northern American with UK, for example, you see more English people from UK traveling on their own.
That's a good analogy.
My personal experience recently, I went to the summit of the ATTA, the Adventure Travel Trade Association, was in Japan. Right. So it was an exciting trip. And the first shock for me was no one speaking English. It was in my first time in my life, I couldn't communicate properly. So Google Translate became my best friend. And literally, you need to present yourself in the restaurant, the local restaurant. When they find you are a foreigner, they do like this, like they don't have a space for you, because they don't feel right. They cannot understand you or speak your language or English.
So I saw you hold up your hands in cross fashion. And I'm saying that because it's a podcast, so maybe somebody didn't see that. And I thought it was pretty cool. Indeed. So you said they hold up their hands, kind of like make an X with their arms, like, hey, we don't.
The restaurant is busy.
Too much work to deal with you.
Exactly. Too much work, or they don't feel, they feel ashamed. They cannot speak English.
Yeah. Well, I think
Japanese, in that sense, they feel bad to themselves. They cannot speak English.
So I'd rather just avoid the whole situation.
I just stop in a restaurant, like I pop up Google Translate already with, may I have a table for two, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was the way we can get in.
Because you're showing that your willingness to communicate however they need to communicate, as opposed to sometimes North Americans just show up and expect everybody to figure it out.
I think American expect. I mean, in that sense, if you ask to any company, probably Americans are really good ideal clients, because they want to book everything with you. They don't want to deal with everything on their own.
That's true.
And they're crazy for tipping. So what can be better than that?
they're completely dependent on you. They'll let you book every single moment of the day because they want to make sure they don't have 5 minutes where they're not able to talk to somebody, maybe. Yeah. And, you know, I've never really thought this out very much, but I'm curious. Like, just the word Patagonia is just understood on some level in North America. We've got a clothing and outdoor adventure company, you know, Patagonia. It's like, it almost sounds American to us, right? And it seems like an English word. So the idea of going to Patagonia probably just feels like, okay, it just, as opposed to going to Colombia or Machu Picchu or Brazil or whatever. I think Americans just feel more comfortable because they at least know the word. They know how to say the word. And I'm not you know, saying that North Americans are intelligent. They're incredibly intelligent, as are people all over the world. But yeah. Also, one thing I know about people is many people are drawn to things they're comfortable with, you know, that they recognize. So I can see where that may play into it.
And I must say, Americans are the clients who get well known where they go. So mostly of our clients from US, they came with the right clothes. They have been reading about Patagonia, so they know where they are going compared with another client. So they read about, they follow the instructions. So it's all good.
Okay. No, that's interesting. There's quite a few questions. We talked a little bit about crises and how you can look back at them and figure out, well, okay, what are, and I just wanted to share one quick thing on that is, like, kind of fortunate, like when you go into something at a bad time, you need to figure stuff out quicker, right? Because sometimes if you step in at just the right time, you can just be like, all of a sudden we've got business and we're just trying to figure out how to keep up with the business. And we're doing 5 or 10 years of business is great. And then the crisis hits and you don't even know why you had business in the first place. And all of a sudden the business just dries up and meanwhile, you've bought a bunch of vehicles, you've hired a bunch of people, you've over-invested because you thought the business was going to go great forever. And then it dries up and then there's a crisis and bankruptcies and all that stuff. Whereas when you start in a difficult time, you maybe can kind of, you know, work a little harder in the beginning to figure things out. So then, you know, as the business picks up, I don't know. That's just kind of what was coming up for me. Did you see that, you know, back at your business?
I think I'm a person who don't like to have death. So I do what I can with the money I have. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, we were, when the COVID arrived, we were in a pretty good position economically with saving money for the company. We didn't working with credit to the bank or anything. So we were very proud to keep all our staff 50% salary right away for almost 2 years, but we didn't fire anyone. And that was a great opportunity because we have freed a lot of time. Because the season starts to be so busy that the season ends and already sales and marketing are in high season. And operations are doing the inventory and buying new tents and preparing for the next season. So we didn't have a moment to stop and see ourselves. And these 2 years were great for that. We had time to stop. We start to focus a lot in redo the organization of the company. Especially because trying to don't fire sales people. We take some people from sales and put it in marketing, for example, because we knew they have skills in marketing. Mm-hmm. And And we focus a lot in do it a Chile Nativo 3.2, I call it, like, because focusing in, for example, now we are in the process of being a B corporation. So sustainability and how we can change things. Now we are we have a coaching for the company. So we have coaching for the company and we have a coaching for the manager, so to the head of the company. And we are focusing in a mission, which is called growing with happiness. So, which means like how we can grow properly, like everybody's happy. Because me as an owner, if I don't see people working for me happy, I'm not happy. I want to feel proud of the company and feel like everybody's happy working here and want to work here. So these 2 years give us the first step to like kind of stop and see ourselves and see where we want to go, how we want to go there, and what we are going to do in the time. And that was the beginning. That didn't say, I don't say that that was easy or that was not difficult or stressful, because when we start having business again, was very stressful. Was very stressful because we didn't have too much people for the huge amount of sales we had. And so everybody worked. We start to this program, Growing with Happiness, because it was pretty hard for everybody.
What do you think the thing is? So when it comes to tourism professionals that work on your team, when you say, okay, what is the thing, if there's one thing that you need to provide to your team in order for them to be happy? Because in some businesses, you know, some people talk about, well, you got to pay them more. You got to give them more time off. You got to give them this, this, that, and this. So what have you found is the most important for tourism type of people, especially, Chilean tourism people? What makes them happy?
Well, our team is Chilean, Argentinian, and American. One is difficult. I will say money definitely is important. I mean, the behind that employee is a family. So I think we always try to focus in get better salaries than the average, almost okay. to the top of the industry. And that also give you the chance to that the best people want to go with, work with you. And but also I think it's important to listen them, because sometimes you don't see the needs. Funny because you mentioned this, because since we are doing all these procedures to apply to this big corporation, one of the areas if the bienestar, wellness, how you say bienestar, wellness?
Wellness?
Well-being of of the staff, of the employees and staff. And we find out we never have been doing a feedback form for our own staff. We send feedback to our clients, we fix the staff.
Oh, yeah.
Good, and we find out we need to send this to, okay, if we're planning to do these 5 benefits, please order your important for you, for your life.
Good for you. Yeah,
that's because cool. That is going to be give us a first picture of, okay, so how is, because like you say, it's not salary only. Okay, we have good salaries. But what happens if somebody is struggling with something different, a disease in the family, or the partners have not a job, have tons of kids, I don't know. So that was our first job today. Duty is to create this feedback form to start to take a picture and a feeling of how the people feel with us or the needs they have.
It's interesting because different people obviously have different needs. And when you explained all that, I recognized that from my perspective anyway, well, you mentioned that your team is Chilean, Argentine, and English American.
Yeah, U.S.
And, you know, people in the U.S. in tourism, I think I've got a story in my head that a lot of people in the U.S. and maybe even yourself was willing to take a pay cut to go into tourism, right? Because presumably back in the day when you're in that building in Santiago, you probably took a pay cut to go down south and work at Explora? I don't know. A lot of Americans will leave jobs where they're making pretty good money to go do tourism stuff. My experience working with guides in, you know, other parts of the world, they probably didn't go into tourism. I mean, it was a legitimate job choice. It was like they went into tourism because they wanted to make more money. They went, you know, go into tourism because they wanted to provide, you know, for their families. They wanted to have access to people that would tip and that type of thing. So I've got this story in my head that maybe the typical guide in Chile or Colombia or Central America, I managed a lodge in Belize. My guides in Belize didn't become guides because they thought tourism was great. They became guides because they saw it as a business, as an opportunity to provide for their families. So a guide in Belize might be like, what makes them happy? More money. A guide in America, sometimes what makes them happy? I don't know. More free gear, more trips, more time off so they can go do their own cool trips. I don't know. So do you think there's a difference between your guide team and maybe other places in the world, or what do you think?
I don't think so, really. I think like something you missed there is a lot of people who work in tourism is because they love nature. So it's not just money and looking for a job. It's because they love nature, and I include myself there. They love what we do. They love to be involved in traveling. They love to be and do a trip or a scouting and live in beautiful places too, because most of these places are beautiful. And I see that in the, I'm pretty strong in the ATTA. I am ambassador for Chile with another two guys from different companies. So I participate pretty strong in that community. And what I find out in that community, which is worldwide, is
it's a great organization. I mean, that's how you and I connected.
And I find that my tribe. I find that people like it's exactly like me, but worldwide. So what I'm thinking is like, I don't think, for example, the people who have been working from a different another country for Chile Nativo is because they are already living in Puerto Natales.
Okay.
So, for example, these a lot of guys go to work there from worldwide, French, Canada, U.S., U.K., Australia, New Zealand, and these people after guiding, you know, every guy after a few years they get burn out about guiding, and they want, or they have a family, they want to have a home and come back every day to the house, not to the home. And so these are the foreigners who mostly are working in tourism in Patagonia, not because someone from the state sent an email say, hey man, I'm looking to any kind of job to move there. It's not money related. We have those, and most of those are in program of free job for, you know, for a roof and food. I don't do that, but there are several company ranches, for example, people who dream to work with horses in a ranch. Okay. And they're happy with that. But that is in the short terms, after probably a season, or it's super young that they prove Patagonia and they go back to the life, or they figure out they need to find a proper job and they settle in Patagonia. Patagonia is a mix of nationalities and races. It's pretty neat to see. Yeah, myself, cool. I'm married with an American woman. So, and I met her there. So that happened a lot, and probably in other places too. And I see that in the ATTA, like it's a worldwide community. It's not just a difference in between Latin America or US or Northern Hemisphere.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have actually participated in a ATTA summit as well. I went, it was a few years ago in Namibia. And like you, I felt like, okay, this is my tribe. This is like, man, I'm like, I didn't grow up with a bunch of people like that, but here I found them in Africa. And it was really, really cool. And also like the people that were there, the people that are really active in ATTA are exactly, you know, what we're describing is people like they're doing it because they're passionate about it. They love it. It's not like probably, I mean, many of them are very successful in business, but they didn't wake up one morning and thought, oh, tourism's where I'm going to make a bunch of money. And they, you know, and go that route. So you see the people that show up at these summits or these events that are active in ATTA, they're passionate about what they're doing. And then maybe, I guess what I'm hearing you say is maybe, you know, maybe some of the other people in their organizations enjoy it, like meeting with clients, like spending time with people from other countries. I have no idea where I'm going with this. So I'll stop and change directions, but
enough.
I'm happy you brought that up though about the ATTA. They're a great organization. And and this is along those lines, because I know that with ATTA, one of the things is like, how do we become responsible stewards of the environment of, you know, these places that we use? Because most of us in tourism are benefiting from the natural lands, the landscape, the communities that we work in. And how do we do that responsibly? You mentioned like after COVID, things just got kind of crazy, and you know, and you're not the only like pretty much everybody I'm talking to is sharing stories like that. And it's like, how do you do this responsibly, as you know, in the age of social media and Instagram, where one person can post a picture of themselves on a bridge, and then you know, 1 million people want to go stand on the same bridge and take their picture there. How do we do that, and what's the responsibility of tour operators?
It's not easy. It's not an easy answer, but it's a lot of job to do, and a lot of work which is done already or is happening. And just to finish with the ATTA, then I think about, for me at least, the ATTA is usually when you go to the summit, you go ahead of the industry. You talk with the big, smart people who are thinking ahead. So when you come back to your country, you have a job to do, which is trespass that to the industry and say, guys, for example, now is over tourism. Mm-hmm. Over tourism is coming and is there, and it's going to be worth, especially because the huge amount of people want to travel to the hotspot. And you can see already problems in several areas where the locals are rejected the tourists because it's destroyed the economy. The rents are too expensive. They cannot go to a restaurant because they're focusing on the tourists, etc. So over tourism is one of the main things now. And one of the things they talk about.
Sure. See? Gonzalo, bear with me here, because what's the word that you're using? I want to make sure I can hear it. And I want to make sure that everybody that's listening can understand exactly what we're talking about.
Over tourism.
Auto tourism.
No, over. Como a lot of people going to the same place.
Okay,
over tourism. Like too many people going to the hotspot worldwide.
Over, okay, I'm with you. Over tourism, of course. Over tourism.
Okay, so
I think my little earpiece isn't working. Your English is absolutely perfect. No accent whatsoever. Over tourism. Okay.
So that's the new thing now, and how we can work with that. And part of the meeting we have in the summit was, okay, let's work in the low season. Let's try to open the low season. So people first work with the communities. So the communities feel involved. They don't feel like somebody came, used everything and leave. No, yeah. They feel involved. And if we can take people from the high season, and particularly in Patagonia, where the low season is beautiful. It's just a misconception that if you go in Patagonia, you need to be in summer because winter, you cannot go there. And it's not. Mm-hmm. Probably most of the state, middle west U.S., is more cold than going to Patagonia in winter. Mm-hmm. And so that's a job we need to do as a community, as an industry, and also working with the hand with the governments. To promote, to create, to expand the tourism world during the year, and not just focusing in 3-4 months. And is you mentioned about sustainability? Sorry.
Do you find that it's difficult because there's so many different players involved? You've got the adventure tour operators that maybe kind of have. I'm going to say probably. Or I don't know. I don't want to make the assumptions, but maybe more sustainability focused, maybe a little bit closer to their communities than the bigger, you know, Airbnb companies or, you know, the kayaks, the Travelocities of the world, the resort hotel chains of the world. But we all have a role, right? And how do you get all those operators to, because, you know, I don't know, that's a challenge.
Well, right? I think it's tour operators and different business, like you say, the resort and everything, everyone need to figure out how to do it. And I think they are doing it most of the time. So I think this is not, we cannot see this as a negative thing. It's a positive. It's the chance now we have to change. And that means also the client need to change. For example, we decide to stop giving plastic bottle with water. Some tour operators request to have a plastic bottle of water in every seat in the transfer every day. We say, mm-hmm. no, we have a dispenser with water. And also you need to bring your own bottle. Go to the kitchen and grab one of those 20 bottles you have there.
I know. Everybody has them.
Bring one of those because we are not going to give you a souvenir. If you don't have a bottle, you need to buy it. Okay, because it's responsibility is also for the client. And I must say, the clients are changing and clients are choosing companies that are willing to pay more for companies who doing an effort to keep this earth healthier. And, mm-hmm. and because it's expensive, it costs more, you know? And it's a commitment in between clients, in between companies, in between tour operators. If a tour operator doesn't want to tell the client they need a bottle, well, you probably need to choose another outfitter, and you eventually we are going to run out of outfitter, and that tour operator likely is going to change the mind and going to follow the situation of certain things we can do. And the most important for me is just to start doing something, because it's so overwhelming, like you say, carbon footprint, zero waste. You know, there are so many things, like you kind of freeze. But mm-hmm. someone said, like, just do one thing. It's a lot of things to do. Just start with something. Okay, no bottles, ready. Okay, no plastic bag for the pack lunches. Let's do a compost. Okay, mm-hmm. let's do a serious recycle in the office. Let's start to measure the carbon footprint, and let's put that in the price. And let's make the client like he's paying more because he's paying for the footprint of what he's doing, and put him to pay also for the footprint of the fly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thing, because, you know, you've got some companies that are looking at it that way, others that are not, and it's, you know, you want to be competitive. And yeah. There's challenges. I get
but
that.
But if you don't change, you are going to die on the way.
You're absolutely right. You got to do something. And if you're just like, well, I can't do it all, so I'm not going to do anything. Well, that's a losing approach.
Exactly. So,
and I love that you're sharing that, because I think it is important that the traveler also takes some response. Because if the travelers are constantly asking for a bottle of water, that puts the tour operators in a pretty tough spot. Can they stand their ground and say, no, we're not going to do it? Yes, of course you can. And if the traveling public is more aware of it and more flexible and playing their role, I think that's super important as well.
But at the same time, if the travel requests a water, you can bring a solution. We have water, fresh water with big tanks, yeah. you know? Mm-hmm. You just need to fill the bottle every time you need it.
Yeah.
So that's a solution for the problem of the water. It's just not a bottle of plastic that then you throw out in the garbage.
Yeah, and it's an interesting subject. So what and about your business, because we talked a lot about business in general. We talked just about tourism, like people, like the tribe, right? And we've covered a lot of great things. And I want our listeners to have an opportunity to kind of get pretty clear on what you're doing now, as far as your business, what you're excited about, as far as new products coming online here in the next year. And when I say products, I hate the word products, but you know what I mean.
Experiences,
right? Expeditions, tours, experiences is really the word. So what should they know that you guys are doing here in the next 12 months or so? What should they know about Chile that maybe is not obvious to them? And how can they connect with you and take the next step to experience it?
Okay. So I just came back from to my home from Patagonia to do a farm trip of Estancias and e-bikes. For the ones who know what Estancia is, it's a ranch. That's the name we did we do in Patagonia for the huge ranches. So just working about over-tourism and how you can put people out of the hotspot, we just ran for three tour operators and two journalists from Brazil and US. An amazing 8 days e-bike trip from Puerto Natales, ranch to ranch, around the park, not even getting to the park, to the main spot, but looking the towers, away from the crowd, with the luxury twist of a private chef every night. Simple locations, strong relationship with the local culture, so the owner of the ranch is cooking the lamb barbecue for you, drinking a mate with you, telling you how to use the calabaza, and that is something like it's going to, I think e-bikes is the new thing worldwide.
It's big, isn't it? I've had a few conversations. It's a big thing.
This trip just blow my mind. For the my favorite part of the job is the scouting trip. And I was working on this e-bike for a year. Going to the ranches owners, talk with them, see the facilities, see if they can fix it a little bit, you know. But still, it's not a hotel. It's the ranch with a little hat, or sometimes you sleep in kind of a refugio with bunk bed. Sometimes you have a better location with single room, but with the locals right there, with local food. And the last day we arrived to the park with a different view, with a private entrance to the park from a ranch, looking the tower and seeing like, man, you don't need to go to the tower with 1,000 people. Is walking there. We just have this private view. So for me, that's luxury.
Yeah.
It's been a way, and also it's an excellent way to move tourists away from the hotspot, try to create
kind of
community.
Kind of spread it out a little bit.
Spread it out.
Involve
and
people
start
local
to figure
people.
Out that it's just, Torres del Paine is not just the view in Patagonia. There are so many places. Yeah. And besides this is Tierra del Fuego. I'm in love with Tierra del Fuego, particularly the Chilean side, because it still is nothing developed. And for me, that is a luxury. So you can do an overland trip there and stay with cabins with local people close to a lake, fishing, sailing a boat, kayaking in between glaciers. I mean, wildlife everywhere, and feeling like you are the only one who have been there. And that's something that excites me too a lot. Like being to Tierra del Fuego, to Navarino Island, the southernmost trek in the world, the Dientes de Navarino.
Oh, yeah?
It's in front of Ushuaia, the southernmost trek in the world, and you do a 5-day trek, pretty rough, mostly for the weather condition, and they have these teeth, the Navarino, Dientes de Navarino, which are kind of towers, granite towers. So beautiful lakes, glacier, the same thing, but away from the crowd.
I'm ready.
And I will say the jewel in Patagonia is Aysén, which is the region northern Patagonia. That region is a beauty. We have a horseback right there. I finished in February, 8 days in the old times. Pack horses, everything packed with you. No shower, nothing. Just little gaucho's hat, smoke inside, cooking in a little fire. Glacier, forest, wildlife, condors, huge lake at the end. And that for me is kind of come back to the roots and feel kid again, because probably you and me, we grow up camping with a fire. With, now it's very rare where you are allowed to do a fire in a place, you know, for safety purpose. And so that for me is exciting to create new experiences. And to kind of develop the rest of Chile, Chile is so long, so narrow, but have so many places you can discover and still are untouched, particularly the northern Patagonia, Aysén.
Yeah, it's just my experiences in Chile, mostly in northern Patagonia, is just the people, the beauty is just ridiculous. And I'm a believer that without amazing people, it doesn't matter how amazing the beauty is, it's just not the same. You know, I don't travel for the mountains or the rivers or the things. It's the people that live in those places that are amazing. And you brought this conversation brought back a lot of memories for me. So anybody that's listening to this, if you're just listening to this, you're not seeing his face. And I'm sitting here looking at Gonzalo as he's talking about this. And it's like, I see the excitement. You're the real deal. So anybody listening to this, yeah, reach out to him.
I'm just thinking like you can wrap everything up with a nice Chilean wine.
Oh, yeah. Or, do you like Pisco Sours?
Oh, yeah. We love
Pisco. Right?
Yeah.
So that's, and I learned something. When I was down there last, I was drinking Pisco and Coke, Piscola.
Piscola, that's a very Chilean drink.
Well, yeah, that's what people were saying, but I got the feeling they were like kind of laughing at me. I was like, it just seemed to make sense. I'm like, can I have Pisco and Coke? And they're like, yeah, but they gave me that weird look that maybe it was like, you're too gringo to be drinking this. I wasn't sure what exactly the look was, but.
No, that's a very Chilean drink. I'm not a fan of the Piscola, but it's a very common drink. I love Pisco Sour.
Yeah,
Peruvian and Chilean, I love both.
Yep. Just amazing, amazing part of the world. And I speak for all of us. I think we're all better off that you were looking out of that window that day and you saw the guy in his shorts and flip flops with his, I think you said surfboard or.
Yeah, it was a backpack and was a surf attached to the backpack.
Yeah, like, isn't that cool? So good for you for taking, I was going to say taking the leap, but. That could have a negative connotation if you're in a tall skyscraper. So anyway, I think you took the more reasoned approach. So Gonzalo, thank you so much for being here. I will have a link to your website in the show notes. So anybody that's listening to this should be able to go quite easily, get through, take a look at your website, reach out to your team. And I have a feeling any question they could possibly answer, I have a feeling your team would be the right people to answer it. And then hopefully you and I will cross paths in person sometime soon. I feel like I'm just up the road a little bit. So maybe I'll jump down and see you this, what I think of as my winter, but I guess it would be your summer. So.
Okay.
Jason, all, thank you so welcome much.
Anytime.
All right.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great time with you. I trust you enjoyed listening to the conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. If you're enjoying the Big World Made Small podcast, please take a moment to tell the algorithm by subscribing and posting a review so that others can benefit as well. I also invite you to take a quick trip over to bigworldmadesmall.com and join our private adventure travel community to receive new episode notifications, special access to our guest experts, and perhaps even some exclusive partner offers that we haven't discussed on the podcast. I'll publish another episode soon. Until then, keep exploring. It's the best way to make a big world feel just a bit smaller.